Welcome to our podcast,
Band BFFs,
the podcast where we make your music selection less complicated.
On today's episode, we will be talking about Appalachian Morning by Robert Sheldon. Cheers to starting the conversation.
This is an absolutely beautiful
Beautiful. All Sheldon pieces are.
Yes. It is in the key of concert E flat, 4/4. It does modulate to the key of F. Towards the end of the piece, it has split clarinet, alto, trumpet, and trombone parts. It's about 3 minutes in length. The percussion parts are very limited in this. They're really more color effects. Bells is extremely important. Timpani is important. Otherwise, we have like some
chimes.
Hits,
yeah, and like
suspended cymbal rolls.
Yeah.
But nothing that is going to be overly challenging for your percussion. So Katie and I both feel pretty strongly if you choose to program this piece, which is fabulous for developing and growing soloists, but if you choose to program this piece, it would be really important to make sure that you have someone on your staff that can pull your percussion out so they're not standing in the back being bored to tears when you're working on it, and that you program it along with something that does challenge your percussion.
Yes, for sure. This piece is a Texas PML grade 3, and it is very, very slow, the whole piece. It's like marked at 72, and then it goes to 80, and then it ends at 66. So you have to be really cognizant of training your students to subdivide, feel pulse. There's no pulse happening in percussion,
right,
or otherwise. That's what makes this piece so beautiful, but also so tricky if your kids aren't prepared for that.
And it's real easy to make it sound very immature if the phrasing is not executed effectively. So those things I think are really important. The tempo is, I mean, feels very rubato.
Yes.
Throughout.
Yes. So it starts off with, it's marked peacefully, and it starts off with like a bell tone hit and flute, oboe, and bells. That's kind of what I've thought of when I've played this piece before. I've told students it's like at the beginning of a movie when like just a beautiful serene scene just pops up on the movie. That's the flute and oboe, and they're holding a chord, and the bells hit and the wind chimes start going. And then there's this beautiful clarinet solo that comes back later in the piece.
Now, I think it's really important. Oftentimes we don't make our percussionists breathe because they're not a wind instrument, but this is a classic example of a spot where I would make the percussionist breathe with the flute and oboe players. And I would practice that repeatedly. If they breathe with you, they will increase their chances of striking the bars at the exact right time.
Absolutely. So this is we're imagining a morning in the Appalachian Mountains. So the clarinet is like a little, I've said before, like a little woodland squirrel or rabbit. I don't remember what I said, but some little animal just like waking up and giving those kids that musical imagery is so important to make it sound beautiful. You need a beautiful clarinet player to play this piece. Needs to be able to play just very smoothly, lyrically, beautiful phrasing. Then the low voice come in along with some of the mids, everybody on beat 2, and you have to line this up so much, and it's difficult.
It is.
Because everybody, like Laura said, you all have to breathe together and start together.
And you have to start super delicately.
Soft.
Like it is,
yeah.
You don't want an explosive start to the sound at all. And
yes.
In order to make this
These
sound
are the challenges
mature.
That
right.
make this piece worth it, but challenging. And you want to make sure you program it with the right kind of band too, right? Like if your ensemble doesn't really care about the musicality part of it and like thinking about coming in beautifully, like maybe this isn't the right piece for the group.
I tell my students when we're talking about a really delicate and sneaky entrance that it is like that you are taking your mom's most prized possession, like that is super delicate, like a vase or a picture frame or something, and you are trying to put it on a high shelf. You have to be very careful, very like protect it, all of that. That's how we kind of treat those entrances.
Then there's another little hit in the flute, oboe, and bells. And then the clarinets all come in, including clarinet two, along with oboes on this little response to the melody that started on the clarinet solo.
Grace notes, which I love.
Yeah, and I love to feature the oboe color in that entrance for sure. Then the lows have another little sneaky entrance on beat two, not very loud.
And if your kids can't handle the, if not all of the clarinets can handle the grace notes, because sometimes like it's written in the first and second clarinet parts. If they can't all handle that and move together and sound clean, put one clarinet player
right
on the grace notes. And that's fine. You get the effect.
Right. And then the trumpet comes in with the melody after that, and it's only trumpet one. So you have to be very careful balancing this with your group, because it does say everybody else has a mezzo piano crescendoing to mezzo forte. So you need to make sure that you balance down everybody else so the first trumpet doesn't have to try so hard to be heard over the rest of the band. That's the new voice of the melodic line. There's a beautiful little suspended cymbal roll here to help increase that crescendo, and the note, the final note of that melodic thought on the trumpet is a high D, so you do need to make sure you talk to your trumpet players a lot about making sure that that's in tune. They're holding it for four full counts over the whole band, and the band comes in with this 3 and 4 and 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and I tell them that's like a little ripple in the water or something.
On this trumpet part right here, and several times throughout this piece, the trumpet melody is written slurred, having a variety of slurs in it with lots of skips. So it is something that the trumpets have to work on to make it sound mature when they're making those skips and not bumping those under the slur.
Yes, and I would definitely take slurs out when first learning this piece and just tongue everything for alignment of rhythm. And then later on, once we've got it all aligned and the pulse is totally set, then adding in the slurs would be good. Just to make sure, because this piece can get out of hand quickly without good pulse sense in your students.
And in this section we're talking about right now, where Katie mentioned that all the accompaniment is playing these half notes underneath just the first trumpet melody, consider having your students subdivide their parts.
Yep.
Like, if you have them subdivide it, then you can hear what they are internally feeling, and it will help them, as you know, eventually when you take the subdivisions away, to still feel the subdivision pulse in their brain.
Yep. Then after this little part at 11, we kind of, everybody's getting softer. There's like a little ending part, a 1 and a 3 in the like sax and horn and euphonium part, which is really pretty. It's like the end of the ripple in the water. Then flute and oboe come in with a new thought at 11, alone on a kind of a difficult rhythm on a triplet quarter notes. To a dotted eighth note with 32nd notes afterwards. So, you know, this is not the kind of piece where kids are necessarily going to understand how to count right away. So working that out, or writing in counts ahead of time when you're marking in parts for students, will be helpful, especially foot taps where the rhythm is occurring for students.
That's what I like really to do. Important. Yeah, I do a lot of downbeat and upbeat arrows on their parts to help them understand the subdivision.
This piece also, whenever people are playing in 2D sections, everybody ends at the same time. So like here in measure 12, there's an eighth note tied cut off. So I will always like draw a crossed out eighth note and write off on 3, so that everybody, when they're counting in their head, 1 and 2 and off. So that way it's a very precise finish to the sound. And then right on beat 4, that's where the clarinets and the altos come in with a new melodic line.
So right here at measure 13, now clarinets and altos are featured. We have this dotted eighth and 32nd rhythm again. The clarinet soloist had it at the beginning, and it comes back several times throughout here. So again, making sure that the kids really understand how that rhythm works. In measure 14, we come back with the very cool bell tones. And again, this happens several times in this piece, where the flute and oboe are split in fifths and the bells double them with these bell tone hits. 2, three, four. It's the only moving thing when it happens. So it's really important that it be precise and in time. First, trumpets get to come back in. They echo the same melody that the clarinets and altos have just established for us. And then we get a really cool response in the flute, oboe, and upper clarinet. So it's a little bit of a conversation between the trumpets and the upper woodwinds at this point. Most of the accompaniment part underneath it is sitting on whole notes or half notes, but they are obviously providing the harmonic foundation, and they are also helping dynamically. So there are some crescendos and things. We want to make sure that the white note accompaniment part is not covering up the melody, but that they are providing their function, like giving that harmonic foundation and building the dynamics to help support what's happening in the melody. The second trumpet part is slightly different than the first trumpet part.
And the second clarinet.
And the second, and the oboe. That's exactly right.
So really important.
It's really important. You want to make sure that you isolate that with just the flutes and oboes, just the clarinets, trumpets, so forth.
And that you can hear both parts. Mm-hmm. Like they're different enough parts. It's like now there's two woodland animals is what I have told my kids before. So now it's a bunny and a squirrel or whatever. And so both parts are equally important. And again, like Laura said, just making sure that the low people don't overtake. The lows do have an important descending line going into 19 though. And they have a big crescendo there that can help because this is all leading up to measure 19.
It's our first like big arrival point here. And the dynamic is marked fortissimo. And sometimes, you know, younger ensembles can, yes, we get to play fortissimo and get the sound out of control. You definitely have to spend some time working to balance what does ensemble fortissimo sound like, and having them work just that measure, building that crescendo to get it to sound the way that you want it to sound. Not most, but some of the people release on beat one and others continue to hold over.
On a concert C, so the clarinet and the trumpet really have to make sure that they're listening to each other. And actually the clarinets are a whole step away from the trumpets.
Yeah, it's a little tension.
So it's like a little tension chord. But it's a high D in trumpet again. So again, making sure that that's an in-tune note. I've heard this piece performed several times where that final moment is impactful, but then you've got this trumpet sitting on a high note flat, and it kind of takes away from the beauty. So make sure that your trumpets are really in tune as they're holding that. And if only one trumpet can play it really well, have one kid play it, and then everybody can join in again, because the first trumpets take over the melody again with some quarter notes. 3-4, and then we have this really pretty, the trumpets have the melody, the trumpet one part, but then this euphonium tuba, bass clarinet, and clarinet one.
They have, I love that color combination.
Just moving pretty quarter notes right underneath them. It's beautiful, leading to a long note, and it feels like it's the end. And then all of a sudden, on beat four, going into pickups into 22, clarinet and flute get a little moment again. So it's such a cool piece because he keeps writing it like it's like constant motion. I tell the kids it's like water, ripples in the water. And it's really beautiful just because it kind of keeps you on your toes.
It does. And no one instrument gets the melody for an 8-bar phrase.
Right.
Right. It's constantly passing around the group.
Little color moments.
Which requires a lot of maturity.
Maturity, yeah. And counting and pulse and everything. You've noticed we've not said anything. There's no snare drum part. So
that's
like
right.
Everything's just little colors. You got little wind chime hits. Then we got these little bell hits. This time the trumpets get to have the little bell tone hits at 22 with the bells. Then there's this really pretty entrance in the bass clarinet, Barry sax, and tuba, where they play this tied rhythm on 3 and 4, and it leads into 24. It's really, really pretty. The whole band is playing right now. This is another big moment.
This is the second really big moment.
Yep, and we're leading up to a high concert E flat in the flute, and a high F in the trumpet, and a high F in the clarinet one part. So tuning across the ensemble is important. A flat in some of the trombone parts. And then we all start to kind of come down from there in dynamics. And it's doing the little moving quarter notes again, kind of like flowing water. The quarter notes keep going for a while.
And I want to address real quickly the cross tuning here in this area. You know, if you've listened to this podcast before, Katie and I are big proponents of addressing things in music in your fundamentals. One of the ways that I address cross tuning like this is I will have my clarinets and alto saxes sometimes as well, and flutes, of course. I will have my upper woodwinds. We'll play our concert F Remington in whole notes, and I will have those instruments take it up an octave. So instead of playing it in the staff, they're playing in their, you know, in the upper clarion register or in their altissimo range, and they have to work to control the sound and balance and play in tune in those octave splits, listening back down to trumpets and to horns, all of that. So that is a great way to make your kids aware of cross-tuning with an exercise that they're very familiar with.
Then at 27, we have an upbeat entrance on the and of three. And this entrance, in my opinion, is tough for the kids every time I've ever played it, just because they really have to be counting and come in on and four. And so again, writing in the foot taps will be very helpful so that they can all enter. It's clarinet, one, and oboe. Then we still have this freely part. It's a little faster here. The lows are playing quarter notes and half notes, so are the mids. So it just kind of has this energy underneath now, more so than just the whole notes that we had before. The trumpet one and clarinet two come in with the melody at pickups to 29, and then the flutes finally finish it off in 29. So we're adding in different little colors, and this is a great opportunity to talk to the kids about when you hear a new color come in, you need to play a little softer so that we can hear the new featured part even better. Then we have this really cool moment at 30 for the first time.
I love this part.
Yeah, for the first time in the whole piece, we have like really articulated parts. Everything else up until now has just been legato tonguing and slurs.
Lots of slurs.
Yes, and now we have this cool like heroic sounding part in the horn, trumpet two, and alto one part. It goes and three and a four. And it's this big moment in these parts.
This is our third big moment now.
And this is a big horn and sax moment. Remember, saxes color the horn. So make sure your horn is the prominent voice. But then above that, trumpet and flute and clarinet are also playing a really important part. It's kind of like a little conversation. But I like to feature the horn here.
I agree completely.
Now it goes up to a high F.
The second trumpets are doubling what the horns and altos are doing here. So that can kind of help beef that up with that
just
brass
for that one measure. Then that's they go right back to being right with the clarinet.
Just yep on that big hit right there. But yep, horn color should definitely be your dominant sound.
And then we're kind of all strong for a couple measures. Then we have a forte piano at 33 and a huge rallentando, while trombone one, horn, and alto one are playing these accented quarters and eighth notes, leading us up into the big moment at 34. And that is something where they really have to be mm-hmm careful to do the forte piano on a whole note so that we're not overtaking this really cool moment of coming up a little scale.
Now, that forte piano, your first trumpet player, your entire flute section, and the first clarinets uh-huh are on a high concert F, so a high G, and you're asking them to play a forte piano up there. So that might be a moment that you consider just putting one trumpet player on that so that
Have everybody take it down an octave. I've done both of those things before.
Yes.
Like, that's not a place where I want kids trying to play
a
high G quietly, and yeah, good luck. So the second trumpets have it the exact same thing. So it's written in octaves. So I've had the first trumpets just jump down on the pickup notes there and just everybody be on the lower G and let the flutes shine on the upper note, which is cool. But this trombone moment here with the horns is really pretty.
It is.
Yep.
The altos have it as well.
Yep. And then going into 34, it's clarinet and trumpet one only, continuing that quarter note, a alignment, like a scale going upward, but now they're slurring it. Before it was accented quarters, now it's slurring, and we're leading into the new section.
So now here we are at measure 35. This is the key change. Mm-hmm. So now we bring back that melody that we had at the beginning, but we're in the key of F now, the key of concert F. So oboe and alto now get that little melodic soloistic line that we had earlier in the piece, and we get the responses again in flute and oboe, but now in alto and horn. So with those grace notes that we talked about way back, like in measure 5, 6, 7 of the piece. So you can treat all of this. This is great because you can copy paste the same types of concepts that you were using in the beginning.
Yep.
But now we have different color instruments, a different color combination here, and a different key.
Yep. We haven't talked about timpani too much, but just know that every time the timpani plays in this piece, it's really critical for them to roll really, really well and really build the suspense up with tubas before final hits. So I just wanted to say that because it's a really cool
piece. And making sure
that
they arrive in time.
At the exact same time, yes. Measure 38 is a really cool measure because you have the upper people with 1 and 3 and 1. And then you have the trumpets and the first clarinet. Sorry, first trumpet and first clarinet on a different part. And they go 1 and 2 and 3 and 4.
And
yeah,
one.
I love that measure because it's really fun to teach the kids, like, listen, there's something on every beat. And they love listening for that and making sure that you can hear those colors come through. At 39, it rallentondos again. There's a trumpet solo followed by a saxophone solo on upbeats. Everybody else is decrescendoing underneath them. Then finally, a clarinet solo on an upbeat. And then the trumpets finish it out into 41 with the end of the solo. 3 and... grace note, 4, 1. Then we have the bell tone hits again in the flute, oboe, and bells. And this
it's
is just
slower.
Like the beginning.
It
yes,
is, but now we're even slower.
Now we're 66, yeah. So we're back to the little clarinet melody like we had at the very beginning, a little solo again, the same delicate entrance on beat 2 in the middle and low voices, then this trumpet solo at 45, and that trumpet solo goes all the way to the end. So you want to make sure you have a really strong player in your group to program this piece. They're all alone with like a little bit of woodwind above them, but not really. Then the band comes in for one last swell, as I call it with my kids, at 47. There's one last crescendo up, and then everybody is getting softer again. But on the getting softer, we're ascending on pitches up to a high E natural in trombone 1. So I know that all the times I've played this in a G in trombone 2, we've really had to work hard on making sure that tuning not only it's in tune, but also that we're decrescendoing mm-hmm. and keeping beautiful sound all the way to the end. So that's a little bit of a tricky measure.
And it slows down. So
yes,
there's in that exact
more.
Same measure, there is a rallentondo.
Yes.
So I mean that
so
moving,
stretching
that's
it out.
Exactly
yep.
right. Yeah, a lot. And then you end with the same beautiful bell tone hits and flute and the bells like we had back at the beginning. And the flutes hold this fifth together, and they have to sound gorgeous and crystal clear and in tune and vibrato, and they hold
There's
it forever.
Wind chimes hit,
yes.
Or wind chimes swipe. And they have to play a C in tune on the flutes forever and ever. So pick wisely. Like,
that's right.
I feel like every time I've played this, I've done it with 2 kids, and that's it.
That's
at the end.
That's exactly how I do it as well. And then the entire ensemble comes in piano on a fermata on the last note after the flutes have been hanging on at this slower than 66 whole note. It's a challenging ending. It is definitely a challenging ending to make this sound mature, but so worth it. The juice is worth the squeeze for sure on this piece, in my opinion.
We both really love it, and it's been such a pleasure to play each time I've done it. I have fond memories of playing it with my groups, and I think it's just a beautiful piece if you have the right players for it, for sure.
It's even a piece, obviously, during your contest season that you could consider, but I would also consider it if you're trying to, I've used it to help develop soloists in preparation for contest season, but playing it at your fall concert or a winter concert, playing it at some other time to help develop the skills that you want during contest season. But again, it's perfect for contest as well. We absolutely love this piece. We hope that you have enjoyed this episode and you will consider programming Appalachian Morning by Robert Sheldon. Thank you for joining us on this episode of
Band BFFs.